Want to try a free sample of berry pie?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, can something this small really throw my body off balance?
Time to consult the online experts.
One bite will destroy your metabolism. Drink butter coffee instead to kill cravings.
What? Is it really that bad? I had protein this morning, right? Ugh, but it looks so good.
Only eat after walking 10,000 steps.
Pie is only 2 steps from here. Am I overthinking again? Oh, the kids would really love this.
Fruit ruins insulin sensitivity.
Never eat after 7 p.m.
One cheat day.
Cut carbs. Fast for 48 hours.
Stop it!
They don't know your body. Only you do. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. No fads. No fear, just your signal. Cygnos.
A BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
I struggle most weeks to like get up, get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Because like, I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at BetterHelp.com. A BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
I struggle most weeks to like get up, get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Because like, I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at BetterHelp.com.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.
I used to go to work with the keys of my BMW, which I'd had maybe 6 months. It had a little BMW emblem on the keyring. I'd be rubbing it in my pocket, just thinking this isn't it, what I'm doing. But I have at least something which is bringing me joy.
Never quit. Never quit. Never quit radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. As always, thank you guys for listening and watching, and please don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button wherever you get your show. So today, before we get to our very special guest, let's kick it off with our weekly Patreon question of the week. And this week, we have a good one that fits the guest. So what is your all-time dream car? Favorite dream car?
What do you got, man? What's your favorite dream car?
I can't say it exactly because it is a dream. And I've had the same answer since I was probably 6 or 7 years old. So I haven't yet got it, but in terms of the second dream car, I guess, is the car I own currently. It's a Ferrari 456. I like Italian stuff.
Oh, hey, you know, nice. Good for you, man.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
All right, what about you?
My dream car?
Yeah.
That's changed over the years. I think at this point, it would be like a Mercedes Sprinter van, just so we could do comfortable road trips because I like to travel with the kids.
So, awesome.
Those are nice, though. I will say they are nice.
Expensive when you have them all decked out. I want it all decked out, and so the whole family can travel in style and.
What about you?
Do fun road trips.
You know, I'm probably going to go a nice, comfortable luxury route. Go with a nice matte black G-Wagon.
Nice.
I think those are so sexy.
So yeah. They are. They have great. I think they have great lines. I didn't know that the two doors were overseas. Overseas, you have the two-door G-Wagons, but over here we have the four doors. Is that true?
I mean, I've definitely seen some four doors here.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like two doors
are here.
Right.
I heard that. I didn't know if that was true or not. Okay, so mine, I'm going to have to go old school, man. I think if I could have any car parked in it, it had to be the Mach 5. I mean, I just think that was an awesome ride. I loved Speed Racer growing up. And
yeah,
how many people have that one, right? So I'm going to have to – I was thinking about the Batmobile, but then you're like, which one? So yeah. I'm going to have to go with the Mach 5 on that one.
Yeah.
Great question.
Yeah. Cool.
All right, brother. Speaking of cars and racing, our guest today, man, I'm looking forward to meeting you. Like I said, before we started this, I started talking to you about some of the lessons learned that I could teach my kid and just the overall discipline and manners and fortitude that it takes to get from where you started to where you're at right now. So, hey, brother, thank you again for coming on here and doing this, man.
Welcome. Glad to be here.
So I like to, when tell me how to say your name, how you say it properly.
It's Jan Mardenborough.
Mardenborough, okay. Right, that was a proper name too. I remember I was like, man, you even sound like a racer. I think the almighty man kind of designed you from birth coming into this, from what I understand your story. So I can't wait to get into it. So you're a racer and a serious one, but this all started on a completely different path. And that's the best part about it. And so if I could, man, if you could just take us back, like where were you born and kind of raised up at?
Sure. I was born in Darlington, which is a town in Northern England, near Newcastle. I was there for a short period of time because my father was playing professional football and he was happened to be playing for Darlington at the time, the pro club, and I was born there. We moved to another northern town where my brother was born. But we spent the majority of my life and my brother's life in Cardiff, Wales. So I've lived there. I don't live there anymore, but I was lived there for about 20 years. I grew up there. It's shown in the movie where I grew up and where I went to school there. So yeah, two parents. Mother was, still is a, you know, payroll manager.
Don't get
dad
this wrong.
Now works. Yeah, I've got to be on it.
Don't get that about mom, bro.
Yeah, I know. She never lets me forget it. Then my dad, he now works on the railway. After football, which is, again, same in the movie. And my brother, he works at the production line at Aston Martin. You know, two parents growing up, they're now separated, my parents, but I was already an adult when that happened. So majority of my life, living in the same household. My dad is always somebody who's been a massive figurehead. Thinking of it now, when I'm an actual adult, whereas when you're a kid, you just think you just have a really authoritarian father when you compare it.
You have no idea.
Compare it to your other friends. Yeah. And it's, my dad isn't an academic person, but he really instilled in me and my younger brother things about life where you have one life. And he always used to joke, but it was kind of a serious comment where he would say he's paid to kick around the football for 13 years. He was paid to do something he loved. And when you're kind of 8 years old, 9 years old, you don't really understand. But as you get older, it's like, what do I want to do? And my thing was racing. Didn't know how I was going to do it. I had no idea how I was going to go from A to B, but it was always instilled in my head. Once I had the understanding of what a job was, I thought to myself, look, I want to do that. Don't know how I'm going to get there, but I want to do that.
How did you know that? Because there's usually a spark, a picture, a movie, you kind of meet somebody. And I love this question because it really tells a lot about a person. Like, hey, what was it that when you saw that thing, you were like, okay, everything changes in you, especially you. The commitment that I've seen that you had growing up, that means not only did you get bit by whatever that was, you got infected by it.
Yeah, it's a good question. And I have an answer. It was my parents, because they had a friend when we lived in a place called Lincoln. I think I must have been around 5 years old, 4 or 5 years old. And at this point, my dad is now giving me the football to kind of see if I have an interest. I have no interest in this round object at all.
At all, right? I mean, didn't even...
At all, zero. No. Like, I was more interested in the shiny trophies my dad had, like, on displayed in the living room. I remember that as a kid, and I was always get told off to stop touching them. So my parents, they had a friend, and they had a younger child the same age as me. I think he was 1 year older than me. And we went over their house one time, and this child had a load of Matchbox cars, little small cars. And up until that point, my only real interest was a spoon and green beans. Those are my, I don't know, I was somehow infatuated with a spoon and green beans. But when I went over his house, it was now, from that moment on, it was cars. I took a load of them home, and I was just infatuated. From that moment on, it was cars. And then I started watching on TV, and then the snowball grew. Then the PlayStations came out, and there's a story how that came to be as well. But it was through my family friend's son, the love of cars and the objects and the pictures. I had them on my wall. The car that I have now, currently, the one I just mentioned, my second favorite car, I own it because that was the first picture of any car I had on my wall as an 18.
That's what I was going to ask you. To ask you, which Matchbox car got you?
I don't know, Matchbox car. There wasn't anything specific, really. I still have some of them. I still have some of them at home while my mum does in the basement. But it wasn't really the Matchbox cars. It was just all of them. It was just all of them. But I was very... I remember going to a motor show for the first time in London. And I knew what a Ferrari was, like this red thing. I knew they were red. But when you're... I must have been 5 or 6. There's something speaks to me about this red brand, this Italian brand. And I had photos. It was me and my dad, and we had photos. I didn't have a photo of any other car, but it was with two Ferraris, which are in the movie as well. Those are real pictures. And it was like that around that moment of age where it was just like cars, 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 cars. I was the kid that could recognize a car on the street in the dark just by its headlights as like a 6-year-old. I was that in tune to it. I had all the books. I'd have all the encyclopedia of all these books. I'd have all the statistics. And I was that kid. Yeah, so growing up, it was...
Saturate your pictures, your TV, everything that you want. That's how you know. If something's got a hold of you, that happens.
Absolutely. I was that a hold of it. And the process kind of got more explosive and deeper once, say, PlayStation came into the fore and games, because then you just expand your knowledge of cars you've never really seen before, like American stuff or even Japanese stuff, which you don't really see in the UK. So, and that around that time, so this is 8, I'm now watching it on TV, British touring cars in particular, because I could kind of recognize the car on the TV screen racing to the car on the streets, because it was a similar, it was based off the production car. Formula One, I didn't understand because it didn't look like a car to me. And with the racing games around age 8, and then the concept of what a job was around the same age, maybe 9 years old, 10 years old, I thought, look, I want to do that. My dad would always tell me and my younger brother, do something in life which brings you, which is your purpose and which you're passionate about. So when you're like young, you don't really understand. But when you get to a bit older, it's okay. I want to do that. That brings me... I think that would bring me fulfillment. Where at the time, thinking of it back then, it wasn't fulfillment because I wasn't that deep, but it was like, that's fun. I want to do that. Whereas now it's, as I got older, it's like, okay, that's fulfillment. That's purpose. That's the thing I want to do.
Okay. So your dad, when he says that, because I'm a father now and I have a son around the same age that I'm having to raise up now. When you say that to your son, son, I want you to do it. It makes you happy. What you love and you're passionate about. We don't have any idea what that's going to be.
Yeah, we don't want it to be video games.
Yeah, because, and I understand. Now, granted, you turned that theory up on its head for sure, which is great. That's what you, every now and again, the Almighty puts people down here to ruin something or to open something up that has been closed off. You're absolutely one of those.
Here to prove wrong.
That's right. Absolutely. Maybe not even prove wrong, but just to prove that wasn't the right way to do that. And it's like, so I have a kid now. So when I'm looking at them and they say that, when your dad would say, when you picked to be a racer, was he on board with that?
Didn't really take it, my word, as serious. And I didn't know how. It's a very good question. I think my dad and my parents both knew I was massively into cars. And I would watch it all the time. I'm the only person in my family that are interested in this, really, to my level. My dad has a very large extended family. And I had a couple of uncles who had some cool cars, but that's it. So I don't know if he took me seriously as like a young kid or even a teenager. But though it was always in my head, it was always the light that never went out. And I'm quite an arrogant person. And I got that from my dad. And it's built through my teenage years as well. For example, my good friend, he's my brother. I've known him 20 years, must be high school. I came to know him. And he watched the movie when it came out last year. And we were at a bar. He had a bit to drink, so it was honesty. It was coming out of his mouth. And he said, bro,
about to draw some truth.
Yeah, it was like that. He said, bro, you never told us. Because it was a bunch of my friends as well. You've never told us that it was your dream was to be a racing driver while we were in school. I've never said it to him. And he was around when he saw the transition when I was 19, going from, well, just after finishing secondary school to then get into this. But while we were in school, when I had this in my head, I never told him. And I was thinking, you're right. But there's a reason why, when I think about it, there was people that I used to live, they're friends, but we're not close. Yeah. But there was friends where I grew up around my street where I was living in Wales, in Cardiff. And when you're 12 years old, I knew that I've known them pretty much all my life, but when I went to secondary school, they were a year older, sometimes 2 years older, and we kind of found our own friendship group. But we would always say when we're 12, 13, I said, what's our future life going to be like? And what's your first car going to be? Who are you going to marry? That kind of questions. Yeah. And I would always say, my girlfriend's going to be, she's going to be a model. And my first car is going to be a BMW. And I ate so much dirt for all my childhood growing up in that street, because it was like a barrier. They would always say, no, there's no way a BMW is going to be your first car. And in my head, I'm like, I'm going to show you. I'm like 12. I'm like, I've got 7 years to go. I'm going to show you. So there's an inbuilt arrogance. And I think there's a curiosity as well. My dad, my parents always used to say, I used to ask why for everything as a kid. Why? There was always my next follow-up thing I would say. And I think there's some parts. I think every kid is curious. I think every kid has a dream. I don't think everybody's curious, but I think there was just some parts which were fed enough to kind of have, and once you get older, the paths, they become a bit clearer, and you have the arrogance to go down and go, no, I want to do that, rather than just having the environment succumb to the environment. Because as you get older, you know, it's like people say stuff, family, friends, teachers, and they kind of make you go down a path as everybody else. But I think I was arrogant enough to go, no, I don't want that. I went to university for 3 weeks and I dropped out because I thought, this isn't for me. Parents didn't like it. My brother was like, good for you. And a few months later, the academy came around. So it was God's plan, but it was my decision to go, no, I don't want to do this. I want to do, well, when it came about, the competition, it was like, okay, I need to do this. So yeah, I think if when I have children and I want many.
That's exactly where I was going with that. Perfect. Like, you said you didn't have racers in there, but your father and your uncles, they all had that athletic gene, which means that's stitched inside of you. And it's not arrogant yes. to your child. That's from the parent. That's from your father. Mm-hmm. All right, you had drive. No pun intended. But I mean, you can't even, because they don't know how to control it when you're at that age. Especially when your old man, because that's what when your father, when he started telling you not to do that after he did, and then it turns around as that's kind of a weight. That helps you drive through into that position that you're supposed to be in. And the only reason I say that now is because of you. Mm. You broke the mold on all that. So I'm curious, because when that kid gets on the ground now, when you have kids running around, just wait. I can't wait to see what happens to you.
It's something which I'm thinking about for the last 3 years. There's many things I need to get sorted for that, but it's certainly on my mind. And I have an amount which I'd like to have. And of course I would want an heir, but the lessons that my parents have told me, they will follow through to my children, and in my way as well, I'm more developed views as well on that. But certainly my dad, when I was younger, he never forced anything on me.
A BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
Or I struggle most weeks to like get myself up and ready and go to therapy or whatever. Like even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Because like, I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at betterhelp.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.org
for full terms and conditions.
With football especially, even when I kind of decided it's not for me, he never forced me, because I see a lot of it when I was a kid.
Sure.
Competitive fathers and mothers, and they live through the kid, and that's wrong. Because the kid then feels some kind of weight of responsibility. Oh. I never had that, even though all the kids that I'm playing football with know that my dad was an ex-professional footballer, and then their father's like yelling at them, going, no, you need to do this, you need to do this. My dad was always like, he kind of took a back seat, and he gave me the opportunity. Of course, my kid, I would want them to do anything things. If he was like, okay, oh, she was like, I want to play, I don't know, badminton, or I want to play golf. It's like, I want to be in a position to kind of, okay, cool, fine, we'll go there. And to try anything, but I won't steer them down one path. I would certainly advise, and there's baseline ethics and morals and values that need to be instilled first.
Mm. It had to be stressful when you have a parent that's a pro. I mean, I know a lot of parents, men and women that are pros and their kids. I mean, that just comes with the territory. They don't tell you that when you're becoming a pro.
Well, it's like you in the military. Marcus was a Navy SEAL, and everyone's like, are you going to want your sons to be in the SEAL teams? Like, you have this legacy that you create, and you don't, as a parent, that's someone that a lot of other people look up to because you did something extraordinary. You don't want your kids to have to follow in that footstep, because it's a lot.
Bro, as abstract as your lane was to get where you were at, I can't wait to see what your kid gets into. And you're going to be like, oh, no, you're not doing that. No. We're doing this. And because of how abstract whatever it is they were looking at. I mean, you got it. God has a great sense of humor, so you have to anticipate that. I'm just kind of giving you a heads up.
I believe that when I was a kid, I was aware that football wasn't for me, and I was aware that I'm playing football because I just want some attention for my parents when I was a kid. My brother started playing football before me. He's 3 years younger. And my brother certainly felt that I never, because it was never, I knew that I wasn't a natural at it. And I never felt this pressure from other people as well that I have to perform. It was never really there. I didn't feel it. I felt that there was opportunities. It's strange. I've never had this question before about football. But when I believe it has helped me doing something completely different compared to what my dad had done, to kind of, because I remember being in school and my brother was so young, he wasn't going to school, where the BBC would come down and film my dad talk about, I don't know, some part of his career. And I was like, man, this is so cool. My dad is on TV. And it was a big thing. I felt it was a massive thing. And my dad always played it down. He never really used it. He was, I just do this. He was a very modest person. And so growing up, it was never like a huge thing in the family. It's like, yes, my dad played football. It wasn't like a huge, massive thing in the around it. And I do believe as well, doing something completely different to my dad, you almost step out of the shadow. If there was a shadow, there is, because it's more the Mardenborough name. And it's like, I'm doing something completely different. And I'm casting my own shadow. Whereas my brother, bless him, he is a natural talent in football. But just situation, environment, mind wasn't quite correct. He had all this skill in the world, but it wasn't quite there. It didn't quite match up. He understands why now as an adult. But again, it's different for him because that's what he wanted to do. And maybe he felt that kind of weight on him. Whereas my children, when I have daughters, I at least want one heir. But the daughters, they can just be happy. I just want them to be happy. Okay. Listen to this will another be person say this.
Complete different time. I'll talk about daughters with you all day, bro.
Okay.
Wait till you get one of those on the ground.
Because they'll probably end up being like you.
Yeah, yeah. You want to talk about a game changer, man. We can talk about daughters all day. Because for guys like me and you, when you have that thought process like we do in that drive, they shut they shut that down. She'll shift you to neutral, bro, and you can't do nothing.
Mm.
The man cubs, the boys, they're different. Because they'll get to a stage where you'd be like, hey, you're going to do what I say. Otherwise, whatever.
But, yeah. I mean, for the daughters, and I don't have children yet, but I have kind of in my head a structure of what I want, I believe is the right. But my daughter, I just want them to be happy. I don't want them to suffer. Just be happy.
Yeah.
Daddy's girl, fine. Marry somebody well from a good family.
Yeah, please, Lil, fine, be God, happy. Have somebody great.
Yes. But my sons, I want them to suffer. I want them to go through pain because it's the only way you learn properly. Yes, I can tell you there's stuff. My dad said the same thing. And there's a lot of parallels the way I think now and in the future. It's like he wanted me and my brother to suffer because it's how you learn, like in school. And so I want I don't want, God willing, I have a nice, a good situation where there's wealth and there's abundance and blah, blah, blah. But I don't want my sons to be soft.
Oh, no.
They turn out soft, like it's going to be a disaster. So sure. They need to suffer.
And the best part about being where you're at now and stabilized and wealthy is when your sons come online, you can make them suffer. Be like, hey, I know I got it good, but guess what? That's every reason for you to have it tough. That's what we're talking about. That just makes them who they are. And anybody we've gone through knows that.
Speaking of, in the movie, there's a part where your dad takes you to work with him and lets you know, like, this is what life is like if you don't have a plan.
Mm.
When you were starting off on PlayStation only, did you think that you could actually have a chance at real racing? Like, using the video game simulation, did you ever think that that was actually going to propel you into real racing?
No, absolutely not. It wasn't a conscious thought. My dream would always be to be a racing driver, but I didn't know how it would happen. I just thought I was good at the game, playing it. I enjoyed playing. Any millennial from 1991 would know. Like, we just played games. There wasn't an end goal. YouTube and streaming wasn't really a thing. There wasn't any money doing it, really. Well, it was just beginning, but in racing games, it wasn't a thing yet. So I just played them for fun, and I thought I was good. But there wasn't really an end target, so I can understand my parents' position when I'm a teenager, and certainly when I was dropped out of university, like I could understand their situation. It was like, well, what are you going to do? So I worked in a department store, in a clothing store. That's real, hanging clothes and clotheslines, and I hated it, but it was a lesson. I went to work. I used to go to work with the keys of my BMW, which I'd had maybe 6 months, and I wasn't even driving it to work. I was taking the bus or taking the bike, but I didn't have enough money to put the fuel in it to drive it to work and to pay for the parking. But I would always go to work with the key in my pocket, and I would always had a little BMW emblem on the key ring, and I'd be rubbing it in my pocket, just thinking this isn't it, what I'm doing, but I have at least something which is bringing me joy, but I can't afford to use it right now. And I hated it, but it was an important milestone. But no, to answer your question, I didn't have a clear route of using the game to become a driver, but the dream never went out. So when this competition opened, I was in the right place at the right time. I was at home online. It was around February 2011, and there was a new menu, GT Academy. It was like, okay, I've heard of this in the past. Let's see how I compare to everybody else or in a equal car equipment competition. Let's see how far I can go. It wasn't to win because I didn't have the comprehension. It was like, okay, there's a door open here. Let's try and run through the door and see what happens. Because I know what the prize is because that's what I'd want to do. But I didn't think I could win because I thought it was so far away. So I just thought, how far can I go in this?
That's so that was actually from home. You were doing
yes.
That GTA Academy came across your screen just on.
Yeah, just randomly just pops. How does that happen? Because that's the best part. I mean, you're just yeah. sitting there driving your game and then something shows up.
Yeah.
That's yes.
A lifetime change invitation.
Mm-hmm.
In the movie, it shows that I qualified at an internet cafe and I was selected. But in reality, at that time, the GT Academy had run for two previous years. And it just happened to run, start opening again, the time where I was at home after dropping out in university.
Want to try a free sample?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, can something this small throw my body off balance? Time to consult the online experts.
Felicia here with 1 million followers. That bite will destroy your metabolism.
You only eat after walking 10,000 steps.
Fast.
Stop it. Stop it.
They don't know your body. Only you do. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time. Cygnos.
A BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
And I struggle most weeks to like get up, get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Like, 'cause I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at betterhelp.com.
com/TNQ. Trust me, you're going to love this.
February 2011. There's three stages to the competition. So the first stage is you're at home competing against everybody else at home with either of your joypad or your wheel and pedals, and you have to qualify. So you have to set a top 20 time. For me, it was the top 20 time in Europe. It was in UK and Ireland to go through to the next step. The movie kind of brushes past this part because there's many phases and it kind of goes to the main point. But you have to qualify. It's not just you get selected. You have to be there on merit by speed. And then there's a selection process again in the intermediate phase. And then there's the final, which is at Silverstone, which the movie shows where you're there with the other European finalists from Spain. It was Italy, the Netherlands, and somewhere else in Europe as well. And that point, you're in car of instructors. There's no gaming. It's all in car of instructors, and people get locked out.
So, did you win the first? Oh man, this is some of the. I like this part. That first race, did you win that?
At home.
Like when that thing showed up, you're like, okay, I got a race, and you raced. How'd you do?
Well, it wasn't like that exactly. It was a time trial at home.
So he just had.
So you were by yourself. So it was the top 20. You had to set a top 20 time in order to qualify.
You obviously.
So I qualified. I think I qualified ninth in the whole of the UK and Ireland to go. That was just your foot in the door to get to the next step.
Right.
Yeah.
So then so after you earn your qualifying time, then they contact you how?
It was email. So it was all on PlayStation Network. So there's email addresses linked up. You had to enter your email address to enter the competition in the first place. So they just literally emailed everybody in the top 20. Okay, you've qualified for the next event. Here's the details. Here's what it's going to be. Yeah, be ready.
What's your dad saying? Is he like, all right, son, I don't know about this? Or
so the reason when I met the producers and the script writers for the first time, And I'm just, they wanted to know everything. They met me, they came over from Hollywood and we were there for 2 days and they wanted to know everything.
Sure.
My whole life. And when they asked me this question, I give this example where I think maybe it was after the first day or the second day of the qualifying for the competition. I came downstairs and my brother and my dad were watching Sky Sports News, which is like a football news channel. And I said, look, I've entered this competition and the winner has a chance to become a racing driver. And they kind of looked at me, took their eyes away from the TV, looked at me and went, yeah, righto. And they continued to watch the football. So they kind of disregarded everything. I was so excited. I'd come down from my room and for hours. Then I went into the kitchen. I told my mum the same thing. And she said, fantastic. Let me know how you get on. Like really enthusiastic. So when I tell the story, the producers, so in the movie, they kind of, yes, my dad is against me racing, but it's more exaggerated. My mum is always on board, but my dad kind of took time for him to get on board. It's a bit more exaggerated in the movie. But the first comment or experience of me telling my parents that I've entered this thing is that my dad says one thing, which he's completely kind of disregarded, and my mum was completely on board.
I love that.
Yeah, it was interesting.
That's how dads are supposed to be.
So when you enter...
yeah. It was like, I'll show you, pretty much, in my head. It's like, all right, cool, I'll show you.
Right, yeah.
Okay, so when you actually get to the GTA Academy, there's, in the movie, it shows that you're in there's a space for that, and there's other people in that. Is that how it really was?
Yeah. So we were at Silverstone, the race circuit, and Silverstone has a really small circuit as well inside the track. And it's called the Stowe Complex, which is a random name for it. But it has a base, this building, and that's where we slept. There was 12 of us, and we would sleep there for 6 days. So every day we're at the circuit, waking up at the circuit. We have our own boat, have our own little camp beds with our name and everything, all that kit. It was like, I've never been in, like, it was great.
It's great, right?
It was great. It was
to be chosen, show up, and that stuff sitting there waiting on you with your name on it, and that comes.
Admittedly, it wasn't as glamorous as the movie shows, really, because the movie's like, it's like, wow, this is awesome. It was more kind of primitive, but it was a cool environment. Like, you were there to do some work and to compete, but it was a pretty special feeling to have all your kit there, and you look after it all yourself, the responsibility and. Yeah,
so
it was a cool environment.
Jack, that's his name?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
He's based off a real person. Everybody in the movie is based off of real people. Sure. Real people. So Jack, he's based off a guy, a dear friend. He's no longer with us, but he was called Ricardo de Villa.
He passed away?
He's a Brazilian. Yeah, he passed away in 2020. He had pancreatic cancer.
Because he really got my attention in that film.
He was a guy, man. Like, you do any research on this guy, he was the man. Like, he'd been involved in motorsport for like over 50 years. He'd done everything, Formula One, designing F1 cars, worked with Emerson Fittipaldi. He would, and the reason why he was so special is because he treated everybody the same. It doesn't matter if you're some 18-year-old kid or 19-year-old kid like me, or you're a seasoned pro, he would treat you exactly the same. Whereas some people, they get a bit. Yeah. This is my level now. I won't talk to anybody beneath. So he was the first person to really give me responsibility. After I won the academy, I did a test session with him for the first time in this new car. It was a step up of car that I was driving for this test. And all the previous engineers I had to that point for the last maybe 5 months, they would always kind of treat me with kid gloves because they realized I'm the winner of the GT Academy, but still... They would make a joke, oh, you can't press stop and reset now. It's not a game. Oh, and you kind of just laugh it off. And I'm like, in my head, it's like, yeah, funny, but I'm here to be the best I can be. He didn't make those jokes. He immediately gave me, he said, okay, in motorsport, you have a run plan. You have like the meetings and then you have what you're going to test on the car, the whole run plan, how many laps you'll do. And it's all very detailed. You're going to test these brake pads, blah, 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 blah. It's very bam, bam, bam. He did that with me straight away. He's like, okay, I want to do this, 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 this. Come back in and we'll talk about it. Go. And I never had that. I was like, okay, cool. Bang. Hitting all these objectives. It was a brand new car I never raced before or tested with this current team that I was racing with. And there's a responsibility for him as well, because if I go out there and crash, it looks bad on him, because the team would go, well, you gave him too much responsibility. You gave him too much blah, blah, blah. You shouldn't have told him to go full gas. And but he did that. He was like, okay, go out there and go push. The word push, especially when you're a young junior driver, it's kind of like it's sometimes a card you play and you don't know what's going to happen. Oh, the guy comes back and everything's fine, or the car doesn't come back. It comes back on a lorry. But he gave me that responsibility, and I respect him massively for that. And since then, in all my racing that I've done with him, he was the one person to really lean into the, like, okay, no, it's on you. I'll do my thing. I treat as a professional, but you got to do your job. And he'll tell you if you don't do a good job, he'll say. If you do a good job as well, he'll tell you about it. And which is why, yeah, this person is, he's a very special person to me. And which is why he's in the movie, because he was such a character. He was a chain smoking. He smoked like a pack a day of cigarettes, drank coffee, black coffee all the time, wore yellow tinted sunglasses indoors all the time, and have stories for hours.
Those are special types of humans.
Very.
Yeah, you cross one of those, man.
There's a scene in the movie where you're qualifying when you're first actually racing the cars, and you're qualifying against your competitor, Maddie, and you knew headstrong that the brakes were glazed. Is that right? And they were saying there's no way you would know that when you're just used to simulation. Was that ever in actual simulation where your brakes would be glazed and you would know that?
In simulation, no. But I know what a brake is meant to feel like. And it happened in real life as well. During the academy, I crashed the car into, albeit it wasn't a big one, but I went into the barrier, into the tire wall, and I was driving this. It was a proper race car at that point. It had slick tires. It was a 350Z GT2 car. And the brakes, they had these old brake pads in them. And you hit the brake and nothing happened. I'm like, I've just been driving a GTR or another newer car, and I hit the brake pad, it's fine. And now I'm not stopping the car. So I'm like, in my head, I'm like, there's something wrong here. The brakes, the discs are glazed. They're not, the material is not embedding with the brake disc. So when you say this to people, they're like, yeah, you just broke too late. You just brake too late and you went off. But in my head, I'm like, no, this is what happened. But you need this as well. You need this kind of confidence and arrogance to say, no, this is what happens. And because people, when they give you responsibility, and if you kind of, especially if you're new and you kind of, you're a bit soft with your answers, like, oh, I don't know, those first impressions, they really matter. But I was adamant that, no, this is what happens. And they were.
And that, because of that, you were able to have another chance and you qualified.
Yeah. And I was able to stay in the competition, because every day during the academy, there was somebody gets eliminated.
Every day.
And of course, every day.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
/TNQ and start growing your business. That is shopify.com/TNQ.
So we were there for 6 days at Silverstone. Every day there was somebody getting evicted. So at the end of every day, like, there would be.
That's the worst. That pressure right there, man. When there's a cut, the chopping blocks up every day is freaking brutal.
It is, especially because it's filmed as well. Because they put out as a TV show. So there's some TV and everything, and there's like a room, and there's everybody's behind a panel, the judges, and they'll say, okay, so and so step forward. It's like, am I stepping forward because am I in, or am I stepping forward because I'm going out the door? And it is horrible.
Like that, huh? Really, oh yeah,
it was brutal. yeah, every time I didn't really know. Because in the academy, on the movie, they show how you're ranked in the movie. Whereas in real life, we never knew where we stacked, where we ranked against other people. Everything was, you didn't know how fast you've done compared to everybody else. You didn't know where you ranked. So when you go into those rooms at the end of the day, you have no idea. Unless you watch somebody on circuit, it's like, okay, I was definitely faster than this person. You didn't know where you stacked up against anybody. So mentally, it was one of the most difficult periods. Yeah, it was very, very tough.
With each other, probably. I get that. Let me ask you a question. In the game, Gran Turismo, when the designer designed that, I mean, he was very detailed in everything that he followed. In that game, do you have somebody in your ear like Jack? And if not, would that help? Would that have helped you?
Like in the game or in real life?
Talking to you about what you just explained he did for you? Or is that you didn't have that till you actually
in the got to the academy? Yeah. Do they actually simulate a crew chief?
Like you had when you got there?
No, because you're at home by yourself.
Yeah, you're by yourself. That was my point. Like, man, the stuff that you had to run into is the stuff you can't anticipate, like having to deal with humans.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something which isn't really spoken about so much. But after winning the academy, I said to myself, anything I have to do to become the best driver I can be, I'm going to do it. It's going to be, it is what it is. So whether that be fitness, whether that be having PR training, which I hated because it kind of turned me into a robot back then. Now I can speak to a camera, I can speak to people, and it's fine. But I had a very, at the time, strong Welsh accent. And the reason why I went to PR training was to get rid of that. They said, look, if you're talking to somebody who happens to not be from England or the UK, and he's Spanish, and his English isn't his first language, and you have a very strong Welsh accent, and there's engine noise when you're talking to him over the radio, he's not going to understand what you're talking about. So you have to learn how to speak correctly Queen's English, how to present yourself, how to act, how to talk to people, how to talk to a camera, how to give an answer, which is kind of like a not giving the press what they want, but kind of giving them an answer that'll satisfy them. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes. And that's before training in the car, which it's a package that you have to have. And for me, it was like, okay, great, I have to do this. If this is what's part of being a driver, if this is what's required of me to race at a high level, which I want to race at, fine, I have to do it. But it's a thing. It's a real thing you got to go through.
That's crazy. Marcus needs that to get rid of his Texas slur.
Oh, bro, when they sat me down to do all that kind of stuff, same way. I was like, I wasn't designed to talk to you. I was designed to, you know, do what I did. You're designed to do what you do. It's that symbiotic relationship. Matter of fact, talking to you is no way.
We say that he talks in cursive.
I talk in cursive. Yeah. I'll hand it to you, y'all over there, man, with the Queen's English. And when y'all decide to go proper, even when y'all insult people, it's worth hearing. I compliment y'all on that all the time. I mean, y'all can talk.
The English has the best.
Exactly. When you guys start going, people don't even care what you're saying. You're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, that is funny.
Okay, so we don't want to take all of your time, but
I do. I want to take all of it, man. You got me interested.
I know, but there's a moment in the movie that just makes everyone's jaws drop and heart stop when the car is going up into the air. Like a kite. What was that? I mean, that gut feeling.
Hey, what's it feel like?
It had to be just.
Oh, so I'm not laughing at you, man. I'm just, that had to be a feeling.
Mm-hmm. It's like being on an airplane on rotate, on liftoff. That moment where the front wheels come off the ground, it's like that feeling. I would say when that happens, it had been happening all throughout practice, all throughout qualifying, and all the laps up until that moment in time. That car would always, over that crest, it's called Flugplatz in German, which means takeoff. It's in an infamous part of the circuit where cars get airborne. For whatever reason, my car, throughout all the practice sessions qualifying and all the laps previously and before that point, would always lift the front wheels off the ground only. So the rears were still on the ground and always the fronts. So in practice, it was quite alarming because it's like, okay, the front wheels are coming off. I can't really see where I'm going. And there's a fast right-hander immediately afterwards. But there's enough, the front would always come back down. So in the race, it would have been happening seven laps. I think it was either seven laps previously. And the lap that it really went off was actually the in lap, because I was meant to do a driver change that lap to change to my teammate and refuel the car. So when it went up, it was like, okay, fine, it's going to come back down. And it never came back down. And at that moment in time, there was more of a headwind, apparently, from there was a whole investigation going into it. But there was a more of a headwind, and the car was lighter on fuel at that point in time. So when it went up, it never came down. It just kept on going. So there's a point where you realize, okay, it's not going to, we're not going to come back down here. I'm not, all I'm seeing is sky for a long period of time. And
I mean,
normally,
what were you thinking about? Or is that kind of one of those blank? I'm just curious.
I remember it vividly, everything, but I've never watched that crash back on YouTube, because it's out there on all these social medias. I've never watched it back, so I know exactly what went on in that car. I can replay it frame by frame in my head. I know exactly what went through my mind. I know what I said. I know what the feeling was like when it hit the barrier for the first time, but I'll never watch that crash back, because it's the worst moment in my professional and personal life. Yeah. You know, someone was tragically killed in that as well. So it's in the movie, when I was approached by the producers, and of course they wanted to have this in the movie, and Sony were great with it because they understood this, the significance of it. It's not something which up until that point I'd openly talk about, because there's always a journalist that wants an angle for something, and I never entertained it. It's like, okay, I understood what happened. It's tragic. I want to move on. But when the movie was coming out, of course they want to revisit that. And I box things off in my head.
Yeah.
Once I learn about them, understand about them, I box them off, and I don't revisit them unless I need to. So this was a deep box, which then has to be reopened. And you have to, from my point, it's like, look, I need to give everything to these guys, because I cannot allow something to go out there which isn't technically correct or emotionally correct as well, just because of the situation involved. And Sony were great. They did it. It's exactly how it was. How the car lifted off, how it hit the barrier, again, in the movie, I don't watch it. I close my eyes at that point. But I mean, I can see enough to know that they did everything correctly. And certainly the scenes afterwards, yeah, it's a horrible point in my life. And yeah, I remember it vividly, everything.
That's when you got hit.
There's a parallel with there's a parallel with you and Marcus in this. Is Marcus was in the SEAL teams, and he was the only one that came back. 19 of his brothers died in a certain mission, and there was a movie made about it, Lone Survivor. And that's the worst day of his life, and he hates talking about it, but it's what everybody wants to hear. And even though it's literally the worst day, and 19 others died. And so when I was watching your movie, I actually had that thought that there's a parallel between you two, knowing what it's like to have that tragedy that has happened in your life. But it's also the moment where what defines y'all is getting back up and going back out at it. And like you getting back up and making that decision to continue to race, and Marcus making that decision to get back up, and he went back to war after that.
Mm.
So I, as a wife, I did see that parallel between the two of you, knowing that, I mean, both of you never quit. And that's the whole, our podcast is Team Never Quit. And that was your never quit moment of not letting the tragedy define you, but coming back after that and keep going and still honoring, very respectful to the person who lost their life, and honoring that is a tragic moment, but pushing through and honoring them by continuing to go out there and race.
Yeah. There's a difference between getting broken and broke open.
Mm-hmm. I did not know that, Marcus. I'm going to have to, I'll watch the Lone Survivor. Is it called?
Yes, sir. But when
I will, watch this.
Okay. Sometimes when that stuff happens around us, is to see how hard I broke you, if you'd stay down. Mm-hmm. Remember, those people love to watch racing, and they love to watch you race. So now you have a reminder to get your butt back in that car. Mm-hmm. It's obviously what the Almighty designed you for.
Mm-hmm.
So get fear out of your head.
It's a real process. I believe that. And it's a thought process I've had in my head as well since. Like, I knew when it, after it happens, as I have to be in a car. I need to be in a car because I need to confirm whether or not even, I know driving's going to be fine. I knew that categorically, but I didn't know what the effect would be if, for example, when you put your helmet on and you get strapped in, some kind of psychological thing that you can't foresee. And thank God, everything back on. I was in the car within a week, and I was very grateful for the opportunity for that to happen. So for me to just confirm to myself, this is what I want to do. I confirmed it while I was in hospital. I was like, do I want to race? Yes. I need to confirm it now in the car. So everything back on. It's like, okay, I feel good. There's no weird stuff going on. But your point with not stopping because of the situation, those people that the person that was killed, yeah, they're race fans, and they would go to all the Nürburgring races all the time. They love motorsports. So for me to stop because of that would be, it's a fuel. It's like, I cannot stop.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Don't want to miss out on these 5-star shades of the summer. Go visit shadyrays.com and use our code TNQ.
It's not my only fuel, but I want to do this as well. But also, I can't. I need to keep going. Because if I stop, it's like, it's not even a question to me. It's not even a question. But you're right. It's a, I certainly take into consideration that all the time. I want to do it myself. There isn't a moment of me since that moment in time that makes me want to go, I want to stop now. Like, I need to, there's nothing, I need to keep going. There's more that I want to prove to the world and to myself. It's not just, I don't always have that as the forefront, or because of the person died, I can't stop.
Sure.
But it's still there.
Yeah, of course.
It's like to make myself better, whether it be training, whether that be off-circuit stuff. When I get in the car, it's like I'm flat out. It's like I don't think about anything because I need to go as fast as I can. The lap time is as quick as I can on the lap time. But it's the stuff beyond the track, which it can, okay, I'm doing this because this is going to help the racing. So it is like a fuel in that way as well. It's on my mind.
Sure. Not the front of it. I get that. But it's definitely back there. And when everything starts getting a little bit back, you want to know where the heat source comes from. That's part of it.
Mm. Absolutely.
You took that and you continued hard charging through all of your races. And you did it. Do you pronounce it Le Mans?
Yeah, Le Mans.
Yeah, Le Mans. And you end up actually getting on the podium for that. You won second, is that right?
Third.
Okay, so you were, but still you're on the podium for that, which was, from what it looked like from the movie, just unheard of, that someone that
I was the best
just started off racing,
I mean, to prove them that way, the way, yeah, you did that,
I cried
because we were wondering how much the resistance that you were meeting in the beginning. Mm-hmm. we all noticed that, and for whatever reasons, humans, we do that. Like, you know, I don't know if this is going to work out or not, or something like that, until somebody like you comes along and then you stand up on the podium. I asked the kids, I was like, hey, well, if I could ask this guy one question, what would it be? He's like, hey, what'd that feel like? Mm-hmm. What does that even feel like?
There's more work to do because it's third and it's not the top step.
You didn't even enjoy it, did you?
I did enjoy it for a second. But it's also okay. How do I get to the top? And it's not because I can't enjoy the present time. And I think I was younger as well. And certainly other podiums I've had, and I've finished second or third, and I've not enjoyed them as much as winning. I'm at an age now where any podium, the story of how that podium came to be and all the processes lead up to that point, it's like I'm grateful and I'm happy that I'm not happy. I can take into consideration, we've done the best that we can to get to this position. And the reason why we're not on the top set is because X, Y, Z. Whereas previously it was just, I want to be on the first step, not evaluating how I even got to that point in the first place. But back then it was, there's more work to do, need to get first.
Yeah.
So whereas now it's different. It's, I evaluate things a lot more in detail rather than just on the surface of just looking at the results and go, it's third, it's not first. So I enjoy them a lot more because of the process to get to that point. Because racing a car, just getting a car out of the garage, doing one lap is kind of a miracle in its own right. So you have so many variables. And people say when you win one race, you end up winning a few on a roll. And it's like a habit. It kind of, once you win a few times, it kind of doesn't get easy, but everything is going very well. But you can also go on the negative where you have a bad race and it kind of snowballs again on that way. And there's ways to stop that as well. But yeah, just getting the car up to do one lap without the thing breaking down is a massive achievement in its own right. Because there's so many variables that go involved.
The mental game that comes in with age and experience.
Absolutely. 100%. That you don't know until you get older.
You can hear during the interviews from the young driver, especially if you watch somebody through their whole career when they first started, not just how they're saying it, but like what they're saying and how it affects them. I've seen that. What you just said, that's powerful, man, because it happens. You can't help it. I don't think you can help that. Yeah, and it develops itself.
Yeah.
You understand what you can control. Like, there's so many variables, so you understand what you can control, but there's a political game to play as well, which is something which I've learned recently, well, the last 5 years or so. Yes, you can kind of, to yourself, analyze, okay, this is why I did the best that I can, but for X, Y, Z reasons, this is why the result isn't great. And that's not enough when you have a career within a race team or within a manufacturer. You have to then say the same thing to the people that are important, who have a direction, who can have some influence on the direction of your career. Because if they don't know, if they're not someone who analyzes, they just look at it and go, well, you finished sixth, not first, it's not third, finished sixth. They need to know as well. You can't just sit, motorsport is a game where you can't just sit back and go, yeah, you know, I did the best I can. But if the people that don't know why really in detail, you're not going to end up in the most optimal situation. And I've learned that myself for the last few years.
Yeah, learn how to speak language.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Have you continued to race? What are you doing now?
So now I used to race for Nissan. So I was with them for 11 years. Nissan. So I stopped the contract in the end of 2022 because they were only racing in Japan and we just came to a disagreement. There's nothing going on in Europe. So I stopped that. The bridge is still there. We still talk with the main people that were there when I was there. But I'm now kind of a freelance, not freelance driver, but I'm not tied to any manufacturer.
A free agent?
But I am racing this year. I'm racing a McLaren in GT3. The last couple of years, I haven't done as much racing as I want to, and in motorsport, people only look at your last 6 months to use for me to kind of go, hey guys, I'm still here.
Yeah.
I can still compete at the top of everybody. And then in preparation for 2025. So that's the game plan for this year.
Where's your favorite place to race?
Still the Nürburgring. But a favorite track is the Nürburgring, but favorite place to race in a championship is Japan.
Why? You just know the road,
The tracks are great, but it's the way that they run the championship. It's this particular championship is called Super GT. I raced there for 5 years and it's run by a single guy. Yes, he had his minders and people, but it's run as a dictatorship.
Yeah.
And you need that. In some areas, you need a strong figurehead, no matter if it's, yes, it could be bad, yes, it could be good, but you need somebody who has direction, who has a real, no, this, we're going to do this. No, we're not going to do that. And it's run very well. And it's only Japan, only that championship only cares about Japan. So yes, you have foreigners come in, but it's very hard to get in. They have massive crowds every race. It's run very well. It makes money. It doesn't have these boom and bust cycles. It's very constant and nothing really changes, but the racing is fantastic. I'd like that. It's motorsports. You can throw money at stuff and kind of have a big boom, but then you're kind of screwed for the next 5 years. Whereas over there, they have a vision, and I like that, and it, because you have the figurehead.
What car overall? Like, if you could drive one of them, or what or performs the best out there? Because I heard you talking on the rings, like, hey, in the corners, you got this one on the wide open, on the straights, that car does better. I guess you can't really answer that question, can you? Because
the best car, my favorite championship, is the one in Japan. It's called a GT500 car. So it's like a spec series car where, I mean, a lot of downforce, crazy amount of downforce. The engine's 700 horsepower. They weigh 1,000 kilos. You know, it's the manufacturers, it's Nissan, Honda, and Toyota. They throw money at it. So you're sponsored by the manufacturers. And the cars are just awesome to drive. A lot of power, a lot of downforce, quick down the straights. And the tires they use as well, it's specifically the tires, because in motorsports, even in Formula One, you have one tire supplier. And so the spec tire.
Really?
Which, yeah, because for cost. Formula One in the back in the day used to have two different tire manufacturers, but it's cost because it's a war. So everybody wants to give you the best tire and they spend money. It is in Japan, and it's the same like this for Europe, mainly in GT championships as well. At Le Mans, the same thing. Everybody has a Michelin tire. Whereas in Japan, in Super GT, you have three or four tire manufacturers. So it's a constant war. They'll develop the tire between every race. We'll have a sheet of paper before a race, a weekend before a race, of like the different compounds of tires. We have the different construction, and they pick the tire specifically for the temperature and the certain track characteristics for each circuit. So the performance of the tire is immense. Like, you cannot wrap your head around the grip these things provide. So it's special for me because of that as well. In Japan, they do things different to the rest of the world.
Okay, so what keeps popping into my head now, are you gonna, the way you came up and developed, you didn't develop it, but you're definitely on the groundbreaking part of it. When you turn around, do you teach now? Do you coach? I mean, after racing, I'm talking about, like, you know, you feeling that at all to help these kids?
Step.
Yeah, the next kid that's trapped in the house saying, hey, how do I get to, especially with racing, because no one knows that environment, how to get into it. I learned so much just watching you.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm not doing it currently. I've been asked about it. It's run through my mind, and I've come to the decision, no, because there's more things I need to achieve in my own career. When I get to a point where it's like, okay, now I'm good, then I will. Whereas at the moment, there's no time to focus on somebody else. It's like having the oxygen mask come down on an airplane. You know, you fit yourself before you help anybody else. Whereas I'm still fitting my own mask I can help anybody else. So, yeah, the priority is for me, and to kind of build my foundation. Yes, there's things I want to do in the sports. I want my own race team. You have your own ball and you can kind of do much more things, have more control. But also as well, I can choose who gets to drive in my team. And certainly the route that I used into motorsport doesn't exist anymore. Gamers into racing drivers doesn't exist, because all these companies, they want to do esports, but they don't want to host a competition that I did, virtual to reality, because it's expensive and it's dangerous and health and safety get in the way, and it's easier. It's the easier route just to do an esports thing online, but there's no route for you to get into a real car. So if I have my own race team, so I can dictate who gets into my car, I can host my own competition. I'm not going to reinvent the wheel, because motorsport, it's a mafia. It's like there's people involved that are there for a long time, and you're not going to change that. But I can certainly, if I have my own team, I can control in a small way who gets in, and I can maybe grow that out. So that's the plan for the future anyway.
Oh, you show them.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you, that's how you deal with stuff that's been in there for a long time, especially with families. It's like you show them. You don't try and make them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man, you just show them, and they'll naturally open that door for you.
Mm-hmm.
I've had to learn that one
too. It's part of the plan. It's, I have a good name. My name's well known, and the movie helps, and I have some status with my achievements. So it's about using those in the right way to kind of affect the change. But this is part of the plan. It's a slow process. For now, there's still things I need to achieve in sport to kind of make that even more kind of have more validity in the future. So I need to achieve more for that to be work out even better.
Well, we're excited to watch you.
Yeah, I know you think that.
We're gonna
and every athlete does.
Yeah.
But you definitely set a mark in the bar, for sure. So don't ever, I mean, you won't ever think about that because you're still in the game. You don't have reflecting time. That comes when you get out and you've got to start teaching it back. You're like, oh, I did. And you'll recognize that. Right now, you can't. Youth is a tool. You're absolutely in the middle of learning all that. So just keep going. That's basically the one thing I would say to you. But
we'll do.
Well done. If I wanted my team, everybody to follow you, how they could keep in touch with you and know what's going on in your life, how would I do that?
So mainly I'm on the main social media. So I'm on Instagram, TikTok as well. And I use Twitter occasionally, but I'm quite careful what I put out there because it's out there forever. But yeah, under my name, Jan Mardenborough, or it's at Jan the Man on those three main sites. I'll be there posting regularly.
And everyone watch Gran Turismo. It's a really, really good film.
We had family dinner and night last night, and everybody was in there.
Yeah. And actually, the last time Marcus actually sat down and watched an entire movie all the way through, I think it's been years.
Many years.
And he actually sat down and watched the entire movie. Oh, so
she was crying.
Yeah.
it was a whole experience, good. Bro.
Yeah. So in Texas.
I appreciate it.
Got back up on your horse.
For a racer, that's literally a thing.
Yeah, you definitely. And thank you for what you do and how you continue to keep going.
Yeah, God bless you, man. You.
Thank you, guys. God bless you as well. Appreciate you watching. And it's been great talking to you. And I'll watch your movie as well.
I'll watch you race.
Deal. Be the best that you can be.
Right on. All right, brother.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, man.
Pleasure.
Appreciate you, God.
Thank you, guys. Ciao. God bless you.